A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, credits appear over an oceanside beach. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents a Euterpe production.
For 50 weeks of the year, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is a small corner of tropical heaven, basking contentedly in the warm sun. During the other 2 weeks, as colleges all over the country disgorge their students for Easter vacation, a change comes over the scene. The students swarm to these peaceful shores in droves, 20,000 strong. They turn night into day, and the small corner of heaven into a sizable chunk of bedlam. The boys come to soak up the sun and a few carloads of beer. The girls come, very simply, because this is where the boys are.
A title flies up over a marina, Where the Boys Are. Now more titles appear over the channels of Fort Lauderdale. Starring Dolores Hart as Merritt Andrews, George Hamilton as Ryder Smith, Yvette Mimieux as Melanie Coleman, Jim Hutton as T.V. Thompson, Barbara Nichols as Lola, Paul Apprentice as Tuggle Carpenter, Jill Wills as Police Captain, with Frank Gorshin, Rory Harity, Ted Berger, and introducing Connie Francis as Angie. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Justin Soule, Dutch Priest, Carrie Danahy, and Christopher Flowers. Read by Miles Neff. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. More titles. Music by George Stoll. Original Dialectic Jazz by Pete Rugolo. Songs, Where the Boys Are and Turn on the Sunshine. Words by Howard Greenfield. Music by Neil Sedaka. Have You Met Miss Fandango? Words by Stella Unger. Music by Victor Young. Choreographer, Robert Sidney. In CinemaScope and Metrocolor. Copyright 1960. Director of Photography, Robert Bronner, ASC. Screenplay by George Wells. Based on the novel by Glendon Swartout. Produced by Joe Pasternak. Directed by Henry Levin.
It is 1 week before the annual invasion. Meanwhile, on the campus of a Midwestern university, 1,200 miles to the north.
Students trudge through a blizzard outside a campus building. A girl in a tan hooded coat climbs a staircase that's partially buried in snow. On the third step, she slips and falls, dropping her purse along with several books. She winces and sits up. Flecks of snow collect in her strawberry blonde hair as she brushes off her skirt. From her purse, she grabs a tissue. As she sneezes into it, a tall brunette at the top of the stairs sneezes too. She approaches.
Isn't this the living end?
Oh.
How do you feel?
Oh, if you really want to know, I could upchuck right here in Dow.
I know what you mean. Oh, listen, they're having a sale on swimsuits at Pringles. Half price, we ought to pick up a couple for Fort Lauderdale.
I'm not going, Tuggle.
What do you mean, not going? It was all set.
I can't.
Why?
I'm behind in every course. I have 2 term papers to make up. I just can't.
Oh, you could do it down there. At least we'd be out of Siberia for a while. We'd get some sun.
The sun? There is no sun. I think they blew it up with the moonshot.
Another girl runs over to them.
Hi, Tom. Hey, kids, I just spoke to Angie. Her roommate was down there last year and had a ball. An absolute ball. When are we leaving?
Merritt can't go.
Oh, Merritt, if you don't go, I won't go either.
What have I got to do with it?
It's spring vacation.
If we were all smart, we'd spend spring vacation in the infirmary. Come on, we're late.
Merritt leaves.
Hey, Belle, can you talk to her during class? Which class is it?
Courtship and Marriage.
Oh, the birds and the bees, you'll have the whole hour. Now lay it on thick. Tell her that the trip is strictly for our help.
Melanie leaves Tuggle. Inside, Melanie is sleeping. Merritt sit at school desks.
For many freshman women, college provides their first experience in an adult heterosexual society. Their first unrestricted contact with members of the opposite sex. This sudden freedom may give rise to problems of interpersonal relationships. Today we discuss two of those problems. Random dating among college freshmen and premature emotional involvement.
The professor scowls.
Suppose we begin with you, Miss Andrews.
Melanie nudges Merritt awake.
Miss Andrews?
Yes, Dr. Raj.
Have you any comment to make on what our text terms, random dating?
Well, it's,
She stands.
It certainly is random sometimes.
And have you arrived at any other world-shaking opinions?
Dr. Raj, I really don't feel very well today.
None of us do, I'm sure. Answer the question, please.
Well, frankly, I thought the text was a little old-fashioned. It didn't have much to do with modern college life, as far as I could see.
And just how far is that?
Take the discussion on emotional involvement on the first date. In this day and age, if a girl doesn't become a little emotionally involved on the first date, it's going to be her last. That bad, anyhow. Honestly, Doctor, if a girl doesn't make out with a man once in a while, she might as well leave campus. She's considered practically antisocial.
You have used the term make out. Define that, please.
I beg your pardon?
I should like to know what making out means, and so would the class.
All eyes turn to Merritt.
Dr. Roger, I think they do already. Making out is what used to be called decking. Before that, it was petting. Going back to early American days, it was also known as bundling. It's all the same game.
I'm sure this game of yours is not mentioned in the text.
Well, that's exactly the point I've tried to make. Dr. Kinsey says...
We are not discussing Dr. Kinsey. We are discussing interpersonal relationships.
Well, what could be more interpersonal than backseat bingo?
Melanie covers her mouth as she laughs. Dr. Ronch bangs on her own desk with a book.
Miss Andrews, just what do you consider suitable subject matters for discussion in this course?
Well, we're supposed to be intelligent, so why do we get down to the giant jackpot issue? Like, should a girl or should she not, under any circumstances, play house before marriage?
Melanie gapes at her, then looks down. The professor's nostrils flare.
I'd be afraid to ask your opinion on such a subject.
Don't be afraid. My opinion is yes.
Melanie looks back up at her.
Miss Andrews, report to the dean.
The professor sits. The all-female class watches Merritt collect her books and a box of tissues off her desk. Later, in the dean's office.
You're quite outspoken, aren't you, Merritt?
Dean Cadwell, what happened today in class is my fault, and I'm sorry for it. I intend to apologize personally to Dr. Roach.
That might be nice.
The dean reads a file.
You have an extremely high IQ, Merritt, and yet your marks are barely passing. What seems to be the problem?
I don't know. I try. I really do. I study like a fiend, but it just doesn't seem to be enough time for everything.
Would you like to stay on here at the university, Merritt?
Yes. Yes, I would very much. My family went to a lot of expense to send me here. I'd hate to disappoint them.
So would I, but we may have to.
Merritt's gaze lowers.
Suppose we let the final decision rest until after spring vacation. Perhaps 10 days at home will help you to see things more clearly. You are going home.
I had intended to. I'd rather not see my folks just now. Oh, it's not that they aren't wonderful. They're darlings, but I can't talk to them. Not about things that really matter. Not about this.
The dean nods.
Come see me when you get back.
Thank you.
Holding a tissue, Merritt stands and walks to the door.
Dr. Ronch tells me, when I spoke to her on the phone, she suggested that you might be overly concerned with the problem of sex. Do you think you are, Merritt?
Dean Cadwell, I'd say there were probably 500 million co-eds in this country. I imagine 98% of them are overly concerned with that problem. So in that respect, I guess I'm fairly normal.
The dean nods curtly.
Good afternoon, Merritt.
Merritt steps through the door. Out in the hallway, Melanie waits on a bench with her coat.
Hey, how did it go?
Oh, I'm still in school. I'm not sure for how long. I think you were perfectly right to stand up to old Raunchy.
The girls bundle up, then collect their purses and textbooks and walk down the hall.
Did you actually mean what you said?
About what?
You know, what you said about before marriage.
Merritt looks outside at the blizzard.
If I see one more inch of snow, just one more flake, I'm going to absolutely barf.
They walk outside, holding their heads low against the wind. Now a rusted blue convertible drives down a sunny street lined with palm trees. Merritt, Melanie, Tuggle, and the curly-haired Angie sit inside.
Fort Lauderdale in Miami, straight ahead.
Smell that ocean. Merritt, you look better already.
Considering we haven't slept in 2 nights.
Melanie.
Angie, just for safe, in case you ever meet my folks, I spent spring vacation at your house, right? In Chicago.
Every second.
What if I run into your folks? Where were you?
Who cares? That's the nice part about being captain of the girls' hockey team. Your parents know you're safe.
Just feel that sun. I'm going to soak it up through every exposable pore.
Me too. Hey, let's get a tent and all tens. How about it, Mayor?
All I want is some peace and quiet and a chance to study.
Oh, you sure picked the right spot for it. Last year, there were only 20,000 kids down here. Why don't we all admit it?
Admit what?
We're going to Lauderdale for one reason. To meet boys.
So now I can be told. What's wrong with running into a little fresh talent?
Nothing. So long as we're not hypocritical about it.
Hey, well, I certainly wouldn't mind dating some nice kids. Maybe even an Ivy Leaguer. Wouldn't that be the end there? A date with an Ivy Leaguer.
All I want is to meet a boy with feet as big as mine.
Tuggle drives past a lanky young man standing at the side of the road. He wears a straw hat and a sign around his chest that reads, Fort Lauderdale or I'll kill myself. Tuggle stops the car in the street and looks back at him.
He looks pathetic. What do you think?
Merritt throws her hands up as Angie smiles giddily. Tuggle backs up the car. As they approach the young man, he picks up his bag with one hand and lifts his hat with the other.
You have just saved the life of T.V. Thompson, Junior Class, Michigan State. For the privilege of a ride, I stand ready to amuse you with interesting anecdotes for 310 miles.
The girls study him.
I'm also an expert driver. Besides which, I can sing and play the accordion, except I haven't got one.
Merritt scrutinizes T.V.
How big are your feet?
13.
Get in.
He hops in. In the evening, he drives the car with Tuggle sitting beside him. The others sleep in the back.
You pick up a solitary wayfarer on the road. The Good Samaritan Act. You feel good and I feel good. The way I look at it, the most charitable thing you can do for people is to let them be charitable. Am I boring you?
Not with this kind of driving.
For example, take the way I got into college. There I was, all set to enter Michigan. Not a cent to my name. What to do?
For one thing, you can put both hands on the wheel. Do you mind?
So I'm sitting around one night reading in the papers about Miss Barbara Smith Holmes von Haversack Jr. and her fourth divorce. Miss Moneybags claims she'd led a very tragic life. Well, this ticked me off, so I wrote her a nasty postcard. Dear Miss Barbara Smith Holmes, etc., I said, you and your very tragic blah. With your kind of collateral, you should beef? Here I am, a kid who can't even swing 1 year's college tuition, let alone four divorces.
Don't tell me she answered it.
A month later comes this letter from some secretary stating that Miss Barbara, etc., was deeply touched by my note and hopes the enclosed will enable me to enter college. The enclosed was a check for $2,500. You see, I let her be charitable.
You didn't keep it?
No.
Oh.
Now, I paid one term's tuition and plunked down the balance on a secondhand Porsche. A red one, a real bomb.
Tuggle eyes him questioningly.
Where is it now?
Lauderdale. I rented it to a couple of guys from school. That's how I financed my trip.
Uh-huh. You don't mind if I don't believe this?
I don't ask for your belief, just your attention. Did you say your name was Tuggle?
That's right.
Tuggle, suppose I give you a bang on the pipes and we lift a few cans together.
Tuggle gapes at him.
Could you translate that?
Yeah, I'll call you tomorrow. We'll have a couple of beers.
Oh. I don't know. Maybe you better wait and see.
Wait and see what?
Stop the car.
He stops in the road. She grabs the top of the windshield and pulls herself up. Standing, she peers down at him as his gaze runs up her statuesque figure.
5 feet 10 and a half.
Without heels?
Without stockings.
That's a lot of girl, Tuggle. A lot of nice girl.
Tuggle smiles as she takes her seat. As TV drives off, he scratches his chin.
Where are you staying?
Fairview Apartment.
As she watches him, her lips slowly curl into a smile. In the back seat, Angie looks at Merritt and points her finger at the flirting pair. Later at the Fairview Apartment Motel, an old man shows Angie and Merritt a room.
If you need any more hangers, let me know. And that bed opens up double. I think you'll be very happy.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Well, how much does this happiness cost, please?
Four of you, $22.
A week? That's not bad.
A day.
A day? For what?
For the roof over your head, miss. Town's filling up fast.
Shall we pay enough?
No, the morning will do. Oh, and kids, careful with the lipstick, please. Not on the bedspreads.
Certainly not.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
$22. There's a hole in the budget.
Angie heads into the bathroom, and Merritt reaches for a wall-mounted Murphy bed.
Merritt!
Merritt!
Melanie enters.
Guess what? Just below us. Ivy Leaguers, three of them.
How do you know?
The door was open, and I heard him talking. You know that accent. I think they're Yaleys. Maybe even Harvard's.
Yippee. Anybody got any preference for which bed?
Yeah, how about you and me taking this one, right? With you, Angie?
Thought I...
Tuggle enters.
Everything out of the car?
Yeah. Say, listen. We got a little problem.
What?
Two kids from Ohio State came all the way down here, and now they can't afford the rates. So I was thinking maybe we could have them stay with us.
Girls, I assume.
Don't be funny. What do you think, Mayor?
Merritt points to the front door, and Tuggle nods. Merritt opens it to find two somber-faced girls with suitcases.
Any chance at all?
Merritt looks at Angie, sees her nod, and turns back to the Ohio girls.
How'd you like to share the floor?
Oh,
are you
there?
Hey,
how
are you?
As the girls shake the newcomers' hands, Melanie wanders to the window and pulls aside a sheer curtain. Angie approaches her as she surveys the view.
Just think, 20,000 kids out there.
Yeah, and 80% of them boys.
Now, a patrolman on a motorcycle pulls up in front of the local police station and parks his bike in line with several others. Behind him, dozens of officers stand at attention by the building's front steps. A captain faces them.
Gentlemen, the city of Fort Lauderdale is once again under fire from the north. We've survived it before, and I reckon we're going to survive it again. To you newly installed officers who've never seen action in the war against higher education, I'd like to give you a little rundown on what to expect. Expect anything. Anything and everything, but that's what you're going to get. Now, Fort Lauderdale is not the only community to be invaded at this time. In Palm Springs and in Newport, on the beaches of the Mid-Atlantic to the snows of Colorado, the students of America are gathering to celebrate the rights of spring. And if you'll pardon a pun, they have that right. They're our future voters, they're citizens of our country, and they are our responsibility. But how the hell to handle them? That's a different matter. Now, these kids didn't come down here to break the law. Mm-mm. They'll break it, sure. That's not their main objective. And remember, too, that they are our guests. So I want every man on the force to try his best, his level best, to try to avoid arresting anyone. I know this is going to take great willpower, but try. And above all, preserve your sense of humor. Because you're going to need it if you expect to survive. And God bless you all.
As he turns and heads inside the station, the officers disperse, several of them climbing onto their motorcycles. Morning. At the Fairview, the girls sit on the floor of their room in their pajamas. Merritt holds a notepad.
The way it figures, after we pay for the room and the gasoline home, we each wind up with $18 for 9 days.
How are we going to swing it? We'll have to eliminate everything but basic starvation.
We will begin by rationing suntan oil, a bottle and a half a day.
Oh, I'd rather starve than go home without an even tan.
You may just do that.
Look, there are ways to cut corners. Like, for one thing, why don't we have a steak pact?
What's a steak pact?
Well, if any of us ever gets invited out to dinner, we order steak, we eat half, and we bring home the rest.
Angie, you've got a criminal mind.
Why not? People do it for poodles.
One, two,
outside, two guys in swim trunks toss Melanie into the pool. The other girls watch from the window.
She certainly makes friends fast.
two of them, no less.
As the guys leave, Melanie walks along the side of the pool in her swimsuit and bathing cap.
Melanie? Having fun?
They are Yaleys, I was right.
Are you coming to the beach with us?
Melanie glances back.
I'm not sure yet. I'll let you know later, okay?
On the other side of the pool, the Yaleys flip a coin.
Heads.
After looking at it, one Yaley heads into a nearby motel room while the other grabs his shirt off a chair and walks over to Melanie.
Hi, what happened to your friend?
He had a date.
Oh?
So have you if you want.
He extends his hand to her and she takes it.
My name's Dill.
I'm Melanie.
Dill collects Melanie's things and leads her away. The other girls watch from above.
Well, that's a quick connection. What do you say we blast off for the beach?
The beach. My first look at a Florida beach.
Now, at a crowded intersection, throngs of people jam the sidewalks. As an opening in traffic appears, the pedestrians push out into the street, blocking several cars. A convertible overflowing with young vacationers cuts through an opening in the crowd. It nearly hits Merritt, who ducks back onto the curb. Beside her, Tuggle and Angie steady themselves against the pushy hordes of spring breakers.
According to this, it's across the street.
On the other side, they see a horizon of college kids.
Think we ought to take out insurance?
In the street, a redheaded girl leads a blind man in a pith helmet through the dense traffic.
Shame, isn't it?
Angie shakes her head sympathetically, then starts to cross.
Let's go!
The blind man removes his sunglasses.
Thanks, Angel. You're real buddy-buddy.
It's TV. The redheaded girl storms away.
Hi, students.
That was a pretty chintzy little stunt.
Don't blame me. Blame modern civilization. Too many cars. Hey, what about those beers we were supposed to have?
Well, we were just heading for the beach.
She mouths the word go to Merritt.
Go on if you want to. We'll be right over there. If we ever make it.
This way to the elbow room.
Woo.
Car 19.
Hold it.
TV holds a radio to his ear.
What's that?
Police calls.
Oh. Corner of Olis and Almond. Student in pajamas directing traffic.
I like to keep track of my friends.
All right, now get that vehicle on.
In the street, a traffic officer watches a group of young men surround a stalled silver convertible. The guys carry it through the intersection. Now, TV and Tuggle enter a dark, crowded bar.
Where are we?
The elbow room.
Yeah? How can you tell?
Well, your eyes have to get adjusted. You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
Hey, kid, let's see your ID card.
Hey, they're asking for ID cards. I don't have one.
Here, use this.
What is it?
Driver's license. Your name is Kitty Bruder. You're from Macon, Georgia.
Georgia? I'll never get away with Georgia.
Don't worry. It's too dark to read in here anyway.
A man approaches them.
ID card. Let's see it, kiddo. 21?
Well, what does that little old license say?
I know what the little old license says. I'm asking you.
My name's Kitty Gruder. I'm 21 years old, and I live in Macon, Georgia.
And you're 5'3", and your hair is red. Only you aren't, and it isn't.
Well, I'm still growing, and I dyed it.
Okay. Everybody, but everybody in town is 21.
Now on the beach, some guys play football in the sand. The quarterback tosses the ball in the air, and a receiver catches it behind Merritt, Angie, and one of the Ohio girls, Dodie. Angie nudges Dodie. Several yards away, a handsome young man with slicked down dark hair strolls along in a collared shirt and shorts.
Princeton. Harvard, definitely.
The handsome young man stops and grins at them, then walks off. Angie shrugs.
Well, you can't get them all.
What are you talking about?
Men, naturally. What else is there?
They turn and see Dill chasing Melanie across the sand to a crescent-shaped beach tent.
Oh, I never knew water could feel so good.
Is this your first time down?
It's my first time away from home, really.
She dries her face with a towel.
I don't mean school, but that's only 60 miles from where I live. I guess I sound naive, but I'm getting a big charge out of this.
What's the charge?
Oh, being on my own, part of a bunch of live-it-up kids. I never knew I could have so much fun in my life.
Dill caresses her cheek.
Dill, why me? All the girls in Lauderdale, you could pick and choose if you want. Maybe choose me.
A football lands between them.
Too many live-it-up kids around here.
Why don't we cut out for a while, find some nice beach built for two?
Melanie stops drying off and stares.
You're not going to tell me you hardly know me. You wouldn't reach that far back for an answer.
Dill pulls her close to him and gives her a gentle kiss. She smiles and follows him. Now at the elbow room, Tuggle and TV sit at the bar, drinking glasses of beer.
You know something, Tuggle? You're the first girl I've been able to talk to in a long time. I mean, really talk to.
Thank you.
That's the trouble with the world today. We don't communicate with each other.
Yeah.
Now take sex.
What?
I said take sex. Now sex to most
TV,
people...
TV, could I please have some more potato chips?
Sure. Sex to most people is a sort of a...
Which reminds me, why do they call you TV?
I'm going into television. They hung it on me at school.
Oh.
Now take sex.
I think that's interesting.
Oh, of course it is.
Television, I mean.
I was talking about sex. To a lot of people,
Car
sex
seven.
Is a sort of a...
Listen.
Car 7, go to Pine Street and Oceanic, Smiley's Bar and Grill, a riot.
Isn't that awful? A riot.
And probably over a girl. In the final analysis, everything comes down to sex. Like I was saying, take sex.
I think we ought to take a walk.
Where?
To the beach. How can you get a sunburn in here?
Okay.
He grabs his radio from the bar and follows her. As they head outside, Tuggle looks around and gapes.
We've been in that place. It's dark out.
What are you, a clock watcher? The day is young.
My first day in Florida, and I didn't even go for a swim.
Now, what's so big ten about dunking yourself in an ocean? Personally, I never go in the water above here.
His waist.
Why not?
Well, to begin with, I can't swim.
Oh, stop.
No, I mean it. Swimming is for fish.
Then I must be a fish because I love it, and I didn't get to go.
Okay. You want to swim? I'll take you for a swim. The swankiest spot in town, the Bahia Mar Pool.
The Bahia Mar? You mean you actually live there?
Certainly not. Just use their pool.
TV and Tuggles walk off. Now in a hamburger joint, Angie and Merritt sit on stools at the counter.
Okay, kids, what'll it be?
Two cups of hot water, please.
The cook in a sailor cap eyes them.
Maybe I didn't hear good.
Hot water, two cups?
I heard good.
As he nods and turns away, Merritt faces Angie.
I'm embarrassed. Don't be silly. We gotta cut corners.
A tan-skinned boy approaches Angie.
The stool taken?
Angie moves her purse.
Why, no.
The boy puts his football on the stool, then sits next to Merritt. The cook brings two cups.
Two hot waters.
Thank you very much.
The boy grins at Merritt.
Thank you.
Name it. Bowl of soup.
As the boy eyes Merritt, Angie passes her a tea bag under the counter. The girls drop the tea bags into the hot water, then cover the cups with their hands. The boy keeps staring.
You take sugar?
Mm-mm.
Merritt glances up.
He's looking at us.
Let him look. How about milk? Mm. You know, this is a nice place. We should come back often.
I always said you had a criminal mind.
Listen, you know what this saves us? Where could you get a cup of tea at these prices?
Like for one place, maybe San Quentin.
The cook brings a bowl of soup. The boy keeps grinning at Merritt, who meets his gaze.
Yeah.
As the boy eats, Angie taps two crackers against Merritt's leg. Merritt dips one in her tea. The cook, pouring coffee, stares at them. As Angie gives a cracker-filled grin, Merritt hides a cracker in her hand. The cook spills coffee on himself. As the cook looks at the mess, Merritt quickly eats her cracker. Now the cook glares at the girls and shakes his scalded hand.
Delicious, huh?
Mmm, like dining at the Ritz.
Angie pulls over a plate of jellies.
What kind would you like? Grape or apple?
Merritt pushes it away.
Would you let that alone? What's the matter with you? Everybody does this. If it's on the counter, it's for free.
Where did you learn that, in reform school?
The cook glares as he makes more coffee.
He's looking again.
Will you stop worrying? We're customers. Want another one?
No, all I want is to...
Hey.
What?
The boy ogling her shakes ketchup out on his toast and offers it to her.
Here.
That does it. Come on.
Relax.
I'm getting out of here.
Oh, we haven't even started yet.
I have, and I'm finished.
Merritt drops her beach bag. Angie looks at the cook.
Could we have a check, please?
For what?
Two cups of hot water.
No charge.
Angie smiles.
Oh, it's very nice of you, I'm sure.
Only next time, would you do me a favor? Take your business to my competitor. Thank you.
Come on, Angie.
Angie grabs the crackers. Later, TV and Tuggle share a double chaise lounge by a pool.
Now take
sex.
He tries to kiss her.
Hey! Did you see that? A double shooting star. That means we each get two wishes.
Oh, boy.
What's the matter?
Not a thing.
You know what I wish? I wish I could come back to Lauderdale. At least twice. That's what I wish. I certainly enjoyed myself today. Thank you.
So did I. Sort of unusual for me.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Lots of reasons. Frankly, I'm a bust with women. They don't like me.
Oh, stop.
Believe me, I've been shot down all over Michigan. Very seldom do I get a second date with the same girl.
Well, then it's their fault.
I'm tricky. I'm a fake, and I guess they sense it.
You're not tricky, and you're not a fake. It's just that you've got a kind of a kooky sense of humor, that's all. If they don't understand you, that's too bad. I understand you.
She smiles.
You do?
He quickly kisses her, easing her back onto the wide cushion. Tuggle's arms rest at her side.
Well, you certainly didn't hear any bells that time. Anything wrong?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I didn't have any dinner.
You want some more potato chips?
Mm-mm.
As they smile and share a gentle kiss, TV's knee knocks his radio over.
Car 9, student swimming in the nude at Silver Beach.
They slowly separate.
Tuggle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could like me?
I think I already do.
A lot?
Uh-huh.
Tuggle?
Uh-huh.
Are you a good girl?
Tuggle's smile fades.
Please, I don't want to disillusion you or disappoint you.
Oh, no. I won't be disillusioned or disappointed. Are you a good girl, Tuggle?
She considers, then nods.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I knew it. Well, so long, TV.
She kisses him on the forehead, grabs her towel and shoes, and leaves. TV remains lying on the chaise lounge. Slowly, he sits up and dons his pith helmet and walks off with his radio.
Car 5, 6th and Grand, a student creating a disturbance.
Not me, brother.
As he goes, Tuggle wistfully looks back from the outdoor stairs leading to the girls' motel room. As she continues up, Dill and Melanie stroll past the motel's neon office sign. Hand in hand, they lock eyes and share a romantic kiss. As Dill's hands roam the smooth sides of Melanie's pink cocktail dress, she strokes the back of his neck, then his jaw.
Good night, Mel.
Dill, you'd never say anything? Tell anyone?
He looks into her eyes, then kisses her on the forehead. She smiles, turns, and trots halfway up the steps. She stops and looks back at him.
Tomorrow.
Melanie sends him a kiss and prances the rest of the way up the stairs. Dill watches her go in, then cocks his head and walks off. Now morning sunlight finds most of the girls asleep in chairs, in beds, and on the floor. Melanie sits in a wicker chair by the window, smoking a cigarette. In the Murphy bed, Merritt sits up and counts the room's occupants. She turns to Melanie.
Who's that? I don't know. She was asleep when I got in last night.
How did she get here?
Dodie found her. She was going to spend the night on the beach. A junior from Wellesley.
Wellesley? At least we're getting some tone in the place. Seven souls. That's a nice round number.
We'll have to hold a lottery to see who gets a bath.
Merritt eyes Melanie.
Since when did you start smoking?
Since yesterday. Dill smokes. I thought I'd give it a chance. I don't inhale, though.
It's the tropics. Everybody goes to pieces in the tropics.
The blonde from Wellesley pulls herself up eye level by the mattress and blinks at Merritt.
Hello there.
Hello there to you.
As the Wellesley girl lies back down, Melanie smiles.
A girl from you got married down here last year, did you know?
Merritt and Tuggle stare at her.
What brought that up?
Well, nothing. I just heard about it. A sophomore from Swanson Hall. She met this real nice boy, and the next thing they were married.
You've got your calendar a little wrong. She met this boy here in March, and they got married in October, two jumps ahead of the obstetrician.
Not for me, thank you. I made a vow on the way down here. I promised myself I'd try for a man the chaste way. And so help me, I'll keep it if I have to drop in at the local blacksmith and buy a belt.
Tuggle puts on her robe. She gets the phone.
Hello?
She smiles.
Oh, hello, TV. Yes?
Now in a blue chiffon dress, Melanie breezily skips down the stairs and crosses by the pool to Dill's door.
Dill?
It's open.
Inside, two guys play cards.
Dill. Hi. Dill around?
Well, he was earlier.
We had sort of a date.
Yeah, well, his father called him this morning. Dill had to go into Fort Myers on business.
Oh, excuse me.
Wait. If you'd like a stand-in for a couple of days, give us a holler.
Thanks.
With a demure smile, Melanie closes the door behind her. The young men go back to playing cards. Later at a limbo dance on the beach, two policemen escort a stout beer drinker through the crowd.
Who's been drinking? I've been drinking.
Look, you've been giving us that for 5 days. The same story every day.
Well, but yeah, at least I'm consistent, you gotta admit.
Angie, Tuggle, and Merritt share a beach blanket.
What is it between you and that TV character? A potato chip orgy every day?
Not every day, no. Sometimes we buy pretzels. What's the difference so long as you're having fun?
This is beginning to sound serious, is it?
If you mean, has he measured me for a ring? No. If you mean, if he ever suggests it, I'd think a long time. Like about 20 minutes before flinging myself on his chest.
You'd get married? Well, what about school?
Girls like me weren't built to be educated. We were made to have children. That's my ambition, to be a walking, talking baby factory. Legal, of course, and with union labor.
And TV is the walking delegate.
He might be if I could ever lead him around to it. Oh, I know he's not particularly good looks or anything, but underneath that silly exterior, he's really basically sincere.
Don't look now, but here comes Mr. Sincere.
Wearing a gray fedora and plaid shorts, TV maneuvers through the sunbathers as he munches potato chips.
What is he, queer for hats?
See you later, kids.
Tuggle rushes to TV, who offers her potato chips. As Merritt reads her book, Angie shrugs.
Well, here we are again. What do we talk about today?
Would you like to hear my Russian vocabulary?
I'd hate to. Doesn't it ever bother you?
What?
Our state of single blessedness. The lack of male companionship. Don't you ever think of it?
Occasionally. But I've decided not to major in it. The mind, Angie's meant for many things.
Not mine. Just keep saying, where is he? Where is he? What?
Her eyes widen as the young man with slipped down hair focuses on them. Angie smiles sweetly. The dark stranger ambles over and sits on the sand behind Merritt. Out of the corner of her eye, Merritt sees him, then turns for a closer look. As she again lowers her eyes to her books, the stranger eyes her. Leaning closer, he smooths out the sand between them and draws a question mark with his finger. Merritt looks at the sand drawing.
Merritt Andrews?
The young man brushes the sand smooth and draws another question mark.
Kenmore, you?
The handsome stranger brushes the sand and draws another question mark.
Frosh? 19.
How about a cocktail?
Didn't know they served them in the elbow room.
Oh, I was thinking of a place called the Sheik's.
As Merritt studies him, Angie nods to herself. Merritt closes her book, gathers her towel and clothes, and departs with the young man. Angie watches them leave with a dejected pout. As the dark young man carries Merritt's beach bag, Angie punches a fist into her thigh.
I've got to give up hockey.
Later in a club, Merritt and her new companion sit in a semicircular booth. The young man sips a drink while Merritt glances around.
Silent type, aren't you?
Merritt draws a question mark in a small puddle of water on the tabletop.
Sorry, Ryder Smith, Brown University, senior class, age 22.
An Ivy Leaguer. I figured you might be.
Why?
There's a look about Ivy leaders. Cool. Like you couldn't even bother to perspire.
Well, there's a look about you, too. The Midwestern look.
Grain-fed.
No. A lot of them might be, but you seem quite sophisticated.
Quite. I come from a large metropolis in Illinois called Cotter City. Population 11,000. My father owns the local drugstore.
Sophistication isn't a matter of where you come from, or even what your family does. It's the way you think, your outlook on life, what you've experienced. Experience, that's what separates the girls from the Girl Scout.
He sips his drink.
Okay, I'm sophisticated.
Would you care to see where I live?
No. I don't think you'd care for our place either.
Ryder nods.
Well, at least we could go for a swim.
She nods and finishes her drink. As they get up, Ryder leaves some coins on the table, then walks Melanie out across the club's canopy patio. At one of the outdoor tables, Melanie sits with the card player that she spoke to in Dill's room. Each has a tropical drink. Melanie glances bashfully at his eager eyes. Now, in a pale white Cadillac convertible, Ryder drives Merritt onto the grounds of a beachfront estate. They park in the looped driveway, which surrounds a broad circular fountain. Ryder walks around to open Merritt's door.
You like it?
Betty be fine. But don't you think we better leave before they sick the hounds on us?
Oh, they won't. It's mine. Well, not exactly mine, but it will be someday. My grandfather owns it. He was here most of the season.
Merritt looks at the fountain.
This way your grandfather swims?
Well, the fish don't mind, but usually over there.
He nods to an inlet where a yacht is moored.
Oh, that's the family putt-putt.
Merritt gapes at the pleasure boat.
Would you like to go aboard?
Ryder holds out his hand, and Merritt takes it. Later, in the cabin of the yacht, Ryder stirs a martini.
May I freshen that for you?
No, thanks. I'm not much for the drinking bit.
Good girl.
I'm not being prudish. I just don't believe in getting smashed. It's sort of juvenile. Not really worth the effort.
He starts to pour some whiskey, then stops.
How about some dinner?
Ryder dials a phone on one of the wood-paneled walls. Merritt looks up from the sofa.
Hello, Wesley. I'm at the boat with a guest. We'd like to be served here. Oh, thank you.
Ryder smiles.
Keep me to it. It's on its way.
Merritt sits up and puts down her glass.
I always knew rich people were rich. I just never realized how rich. What does a putt-putt like this cost?
Well, something over $1,000 a foot. This one's 52 feet.
What bank did your grandfather rob?
He owns a couple.
What's more convenient? A rowboat will never be the same to me again.
Would you like to stay aboard tonight?
Where will you be?
Not far.
That's probably about the coolest approach I've ever had. I have to figure out a new classification for you.
Classification?
I've divided boys into three types. The sweepers, the strokers.
Educate me. What's a sweeper?
The ones that sweep you off your feet, or try to. Often leaving large bruises.
The judo experts.
Right. Then there are the strokers. They use the soft caress, usually accompanied by soft words, soft lighting, and soft music.
They set the stage, huh?
Mm-hmm. And if a girl gets too interested in the drama, act three is over before she even knows the curtain is up.
Ryder flicks some overhead lights on and turns the music off.
What's that third classification?
Ah, the subtles. The ones with the subtle approaches. They have a lot of different techniques. Discussions of erotic literature, Freud, the coming of age in Samoa, you know.
How about ill health due to frustration?
I think that one's been overworked lately.
You know, you sound like you've been around quite a bit.
I was Frosh Queen last semester.
Lots of dates, huh? Mm.
All shapes, sizes, dispositions.
You still haven't answered my question. About staying aboard.
She smiles coolly.
I think we'll have to let that wait until we've researched your classification a little further.
And how long do you think that might take?
No telling. It might be quite a while.
Well, a brown man is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, and patient.
His smile wins one from her.
You have a nice flow of talk, Merritt. What's your IQ anyhow?
Don't tell anybody, but it's high. 138.
This could be a long siege.
What's yours?
140.
As Merritt smiles, the butler, Wesley, arrives, carrying a platter with salad and a covered plate.
Hiya there, Mr. Ryder. Evening, miss.
Hiya, Wesley.
Wesley sets the platter before them.
Thanks.
Do you mind if I just eat half of mine?
You're not hungry?
Well, yes, but I've got this poodle.
Ignoring Ryder's astonished look, Melanie spreads her napkin. Daytime. As beachgoers flock across an intersection, Tuggle, Merritt, and Angie gather at the crowded corner.
And we spend more time here than we do on the beach.
Angie ogles a clean-cut passerby.
Hey, here we go again.
The traffic stops and the crowd surges across to the sandy beach. As a rusty old truck beelines toward them, the three girls dive out of the way. The truck stops and several young musicians get out. One man with glasses approaches.
Any broken tibias here? Any chips or fragments? You all in one piece?
No, thanks to you.
The girls get up.
Should be a little more careful, Baby Ruth. You might have been seriously killed jaywalking like that.
Jaywalking? You came out of left field.
Yeah, that's what they say about our music. Boys and girls, youth of America, the Basil Demetomos Quintet, purveyors of dialectic jazz, will hold a musicale forthwith at the Elbow Room. You are all invited. Beer is on the quintet.
The girls turn toward the beach against the flow of people rushing toward the nightclub. Angie takes Tuggle and Merritt by the arms, and they join the crowd weaving around parked cars. Inside the dim club, Basil plucks a string bass. Four others play too. There's a guy on trumpet, a guy on sax, and a drummer and guitarist. The house is packed. Merritt and her friends share a table in front of the stage. Basil solos. Basil stares intently through his thick horn-rimmed glasses. Cigarette smoke wafts above the dozens of co-eds who stand watching the musicians. Angie applauds begrudgingly as Merritt prods her.
No, 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 please, please. We do not want applause. Let's keep things as unfrantic and cerebral as possible. If you have any questions, ask them during the breaks. The selection you just heard was the Nuclear Love Song, composed by our percussionist. Next is an original of my own, written for guitar and flute, entitled A Meeting Between Shakespeare and Satchel Paige on Hampstead Heath.
Basil nods curtly. As he cues the guitarist to begin, Merritt and Angie share a bemused look. Basil strolls from the stage and joins the girls at their table.
Are we wonderful? Are we the greatest you've ever heard?
Basil takes out his wallet.
Compliment me.
Well, you're different.
Dialectic jazz is not only different, it's profound. Beer for everybody. Let me know when that's gone.
What's dialectic jazz? I don't take dialectic. What's the scene?
Basil balks.
Short girl, don't ever use jive talk in my presence. If you want to speak to me, keep it civilian. No, no minus seventh there.
It's more immersion, less eruptive.
It's offensive in that sound plane. My boys are tired. 5 days coming down here. 6 concerts every day since we left school.
6 a day? No wonder you're loaded.
Well, we did not earn this money. We never accept money. As a matter of fact, we pay the audience.
Huh?
Well, usually in beers. That way we're never indebted to anyone. We can play what we want. Not what everybody else wants us to. We're incorrupt.
Angie nods skeptically.
Like athletes, however, we sometimes become a little too finely trained. And we need to reestablish social contact with our public.
He lays a hand on Merritt's.
Date me tonight, Baby Ro.
Booked.
Basil turns to Tuggle.
Date me tonight, Big Girl.
I got a date.
He looks at Angie and gapes. Angie stares back at him.
Well, let's not be insulting.
Date me tonight, short one.
Angie grins.
What time?
Later in their motel room, the girls get dressed. Now in the bathroom.
I don't know why I bothered to get dressed at night. We usually land up on the beach anyhow.
How are things going with you two?
Oh, about the same. He hints what he wants. I hint about matrimony. And while each of us is hinting, the other isn't listening. He certainly is persistent, though. He keeps knocking on the door. It's just a question of how long I can keep it locked.
Hey, Mayor, I think your date's downstairs.
Thanks, Angie.
Mine hasn't even called yet.
Whoops!
Angie rushes to the phone.
Hello, Basil? Okay, so your name's not Basil. Don't get insulted. Jill, this one's yours.
About time.
Dodie smiles at Angie.
How's the romance?
What romance? He doesn't even know I exist. How do you get through to a musician?
Maybe by being another musician.
Angie's eyes widen. Now at the window, Tuggle spies Ryder by the pool.
Gads, it must be nice to go out with someone who wears a suit.
Clad in white, Ryder leans suavely on a lounge chair.
I never know what TV's going to look like from date to date.
It's TV in a straw hat.
Hi.
His hat reads, "We remember Nassau."
See what I mean?
As Tuggle walks out, TV offers his arm. She turns back and closes the door behind them. Later, as Ryder's yacht skims a channel close to shore, Merritt grins, staring under Ryder's gaze. He kisses her cheek. Then she turns and presses her lips to his. As they part, Ryder smiles and Merritt beams as she returns her focus to the channel ahead of them. In the evening, on the yacht's deck, they share a passionate kiss. Ryder sits by Merritt, who lies back on a chaise lounge.
We're getting a little chummy, aren't we? A cigarette, please?
Oh, I thought we were hitting it off pretty good.
Too good. That's why I'd like a cigarette.
She sits up.
It's not hard to see you were fresh, Queen.
Thank you. Is that a compliment?
He lights a cigarette.
Yes, it was meant that way. Why, are you insulted?
A little, yes. No girl enjoys being considered promiscuous, even those who might be.
Now, that's a pretty old-fangled notion, Merritt.
Oh?
Sex is no longer a matter of morals. That idea went out with the raccoon code. Sex is, well, it's part of personal relations.
Really?
It's a pleasant, friendly thing, like shaking hands or making sure you catch a person's name when you're introduced.
I hadn't realized.
It's like contributing to charity or working on a civic committee. As a matter of fact, it's actually serving your fellow man.
What about this old-fangled notion called love? Shouldn't that figure somewhere in the proceedings?
Later, after we become better acquainted. More marriages go on the rocks just because people aren't better acquainted.
Uh-uh. It's talk like this that may get me bounced out of school next week.
Well, that's nice to know we agree on something.
Mm, isn't it? Well, let's see if we can agree on what time you take me home.
You mean now?
Now.
Merritt stands up.
Sure losing face in this contest.
Later, Tuggle brushes her teeth. Merritt, sitting up in bed, folds a paper airplane.
Aren't we the early ones tonight? You have an argument or anything?
Ivy Leaguers never argue. They discuss.
She tosses the airplane. Yeah. Tuggle returns to the sink, and Merritt looks toward the window. As Melanie staggers up the outdoor staircase, both girls rush to the window.
Oh, sister, have we got any bicarb or anything?
They open the door.
Is this the residence of Melanie Tolman?
Sure, fall in.
Okay.
What happened to you?
I've been dining, and I've been dancing, and I've been drinking.
Shh. Put on some coffee, I'll get her things off.
Mayor, I've been drinking grasshoppers. Mayor, have you ever tasted a grasshopper?
Not intentionally, no.
Merritt unzips Melanie's dress.
No, man, no. Not a grasshopper that hops, Mayor. A grasshopper in a glass, it's green.
You'll be green, too, in the morning.
Who arranged this little party? Your friend, Dill?
Dill? No, not Dill. I was with Franklin. Franklin. Mayor, you want to know something?
Tuggle helps undress her.
I'm in love with Franklin, and Franklin's in love with me. Isn't that the most wonderful thing you've ever heard?
They walk Melanie to the bed.
Now, you were right. So right.
That's fine, that's fine. What was I right about?
Everything. Everything you said. The whole thing.
Good.
So.
You tell me all about it in the morning, and we'll have a nice little talk.
I want to talk now.
Betty, bye, kiddo.
No!
Melanie stands on the Murphy bed.
I've got to tell you. I want to tell everybody all about Franklin and me and life and love.
What do you think?
Oh, definitely.
Franklin and life and Franklin.
Come
way. This way.
They walk Melanie to the bathroom sink and drench her with the shower hose. Daytime. As Merritt does her nails by the pool, a horizontal Melanie removes a towel from her head.
How goes the battle?
Goes off.
They say the only cure for a hangover is 24 hours.
Maybe I'll live that long.
Melanie holds her forehead.
Want to tell me about it now?
I'll tell you about what?
Well, I'm not sure, but whatever it was, it certainly seemed important to you last night.
What did I say?
Well, it was pretty incoherent. Mostly about Franklin, and I was right about something or other.
I said that?
You don't remember?
Oh, I must have been really smashed.
Stoned. But as long as that's all that happened.
Merritt looks up from painting her nails.
Is it Mel?
I don't know what you mean.
I'll run down to the library and get you some books.
I don't need any books. And no matter what happened, I'm in love with Franklin.
I know it's none of my business. But a couple of days ago, didn't you say the same thing about Dill?
Merritt, what are you trying to do? Make me feel like...
I'm just trying to see that you don't get caught in some crazy merry-go-round.
I'm not caught!
All right, Mel. Let's forget it. I'm sorry. I know advice is cheap.
Well, it is when you don't take it yourself.
Merritt stops short.
Oh, now we're talking about me.
Well, why not? You sure haven't made a secret of the way you feel about things. In fact, you've practically preached on the subject.
Preached?
Well, talked anyhow. Well, even that day in class,
you said... Is that what I was so right about? Well, you seem to think so. Well, since when am I the last word? And what did that have to do with you anyway? I was talking about people in general, not kids who go out and get drunk together.
Don't! Merritt, don't spoil it for me, please.
I'm sorry.
Merritt starts up the stairs.
Merritt? I'm all right. I know what I'm doing.
Would you do me a favor? Would you hang around with us once in a while? You're always so alone, we never see you anymore.
I will.
Look, Ryder's invited me out for a run on the boat this afternoon. Would you come with us?
Oh, I'd love to. I think I have a date with Franklin.
All right, then. I'll see you tonight.
Early, and in much better shape.
Merritt gives Melanie a quick smile and heads upstairs. Melanie pouts as she watches her go. Wearing a pink two-piece, she steps over to Franklin's door in her bare feet. Reaching the door, she pauses and looks up toward the girls' motel room. She waits with her ear to the door. Melanie turns away, frowning. Glancing up toward the girls' room, she puts her hand to her chin thoughtfully. Now Ryder's sleek yacht motors through a channel toward the ocean. Merritt stands with Ryder at the helm. She glances back at the deck where Melanie sits on a lounge chair, gloomily clutching a pillow.
Ryder?
Uh-huh?
You don't mind my asking Melanie along, do you?
No, why should I? Two people by themselves, they get lonely. But with three, it's a real ball.
I had a reason for it. Thanks for letting her come.
Anytime at all. I understand these things. You feel you need a chaperone.
With you? Whatever for?
I don't know why I waste my time with you. I guess maybe it's because I like you. Funny, that's the first time I ever said that to a girl.
Oh, stop. The first time you ever told a girl you liked her.
Well, I've said I loved them, but I never said I liked them.
They smile at each other. As Merritt looks out the front windows, Ryder glances back at Melanie, who casts her sad gaze downward. Now, Basil's quintet plays at a club. Angie TV and Tuggle watch from a table as Basil strums his bass.
Purely dialectic.
Angie grimaces and rolls her eyes. She shrugs at Tuggle, then brightens.
If you're walking in the shadows, then it's time that you get wise. Just forget about your troubles and open up your eyes. When you wear a smile, the world will shout, hooray! You gotta turn on the sunshine, you're gonna push the blues away.
She twirls in front of the band.
Just a little bit of sunshine makes it all a better place. You can chase away your troubles when you got a happy face. When you wear a smile, the world will shout, hooray! You gotta turn on the sunshine, you're gonna push the blues away.
TV and Tuggle smile at Angie, then at each other.
If the world is sad and weary now, you don't have to be a politician. You can change it all with a sunny disposition. So be happy and spread it all around. If you find yourself a frowning, just turn it upside down. When you wear a smile, the world will shout, hooray! You gotta turn on the sunshine.
She grins at Basil.
You gotta give in one time. You gotta turn on the sunshine. Push those blues away! Man, this dialectic's too much.
Takes a bow and nods to Basil, who smiles. She sits down and rests her chin on her hand, grinning brightly. Now, a black convertible rolls to a stop in front of the Fairview. Franklin, in the driver's seat, puts his arm around Melanie.
Home, Kitty.
He kisses her forehead.
Too soon.
They kiss passionately. Grinning, Melanie rests her head on Franklin's shoulder.
Well, let me in on it.
I was just thinking. Do you know where I am tonight?
No, I couldn't guess.
I'm in Chicago.
No.
Yes, I'm in Chicago at Angie's house, and I'm playing bridge.
That's a nice pastime.
That's what I wrote in a letter to my parents. Somebody mailed it for me from Chicago. I'm glad I'm not in Chicago. I'm glad I'm here. With you.
So am I.
Melanie leans in close and kisses him passionately, her hand caressing his neck. As she slowly pulls away, she eyes him longingly.
Does everyone feel the same way we do? Are we very special?
We feel the same way how?
About each other. As though we've known each other for ages instead of just a few days. Everything's happened so fast.
Yeah, well, that's a climate. Instant romance, guaranteed by the Chamber of Commerce.
It must be. This girl, a girl from school, came down here last year, and she met a boy from Columbia, a senior. They knew each other 1 week, and the next thing they were married. Just 1 week.
Well, that's the trouble with those Columbia jokers. They're too impulsive.
Franklin gets out of the car. As he makes his way around to the passenger side, Melanie frowns to herself. Now in the girls' motel room, three girls sleep in the sofa bed. Two more lie on the floor beside them, and another rests on a lounge chair. On the Murphy bed, Merritt sits up beside two other girls. As she steps down, her feet land on a girl asleep on the floor. Merritt climbs over the footboard instead and crosses toward the bathroom. As she eyes a girl asleep on a desk, she stumbles over someone else. It's a boy.
Who let you in?
He smiles goofily.
Anybody here from Princeton?
Later on the beach, two policemen escort the stout drunk.
It's not that I drink too much. It's just that I drink all the time.
A crowd of kids follows behind them. Now Basil's quintet plays on the beach, joined by Angie. A crowd gathers around them. Basil hands his bow to Angie.
You mean rub rosin on my bow?
Angie glares at him. Elsewhere, Tuggle and Merritt weave past some sunbathers. Merritt points into the distance, and the girls head in that direction. Now Ryder and TV play cards sitting on a towel.
Jen.
TV wears an army helmet.
42.
That puts you down 6,984 points. You owe me 17 cents.
You want it now?
Ah, from what I've heard about your credit standing, I'd say you could be trusted.
Thank you.
Anybody for swimming?
Come on, TV. Even though you can't swim, at least get wet.
Water's for drinking. Attention, class. Have either of you two pledges happened to notice a date lately? Well, Mr. Smith and I have, and for your information, we have exactly 2 days left of this vacation.
2 days?
Snow and ice, Dr. Ronch and the dean. Oh, Ryder.
Be comforted. TV has an announcement.
Students, in view of the impending disaster, we are about to start living it up. Tonight, we hit the show places, the hot spots, to mingle with the elite. Your hosts, Mr. Ryder Smith and your humble servant.
You mean dress-up style?
You may dress to the nines. Right, my friend?
To the nines.
What are you going to wear, your baseball suit?
Now, there's an uncalled-for remark.
2 days. Well, come on, Tug. Let's take advantage of it.
The girls head off.
Nice kids, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe a little too nice.
Funny thing about women, if you don't make a big pitch for them, they get mad. If you do, they get mad. How can you win?
You can't. You're not playing for the same stakes.
Boy, I know what you mean. Well, you're seeing stars, they see a wedding ring. They're so darn practical.
You know something? I don't think they realize what a risk marriage is for men.
Well, not so much for a guy like you. You can afford to be wrong. I can't even afford to be right.
Car 7, go to Paradise Hotel. A live hammerhead shark has been placed in the pool.
Ha, ha, ha. Things are heating up for a grand finale.
Later in the girls' room.
Bye, kids.
Bye.
Have fun tonight.
Jody. Do I look all right?
You'll sweep him off his feet.
I'll bet. 2 days left.
If he doesn't say something about something tonight, I think I'll clobber him.
What's the score in the Ivy League?
Still playing off the tie? Tug, do you think the daughter of a small-town druggist could find happiness as the wife of a millionaire from South Nuxton, Massachusetts?
You're kidding. Oh, Mayor, I'm so happy for you.
Mayor, that's mystic. Absolutely mystic.
Wait, wait. Do not mail the shower invitations yet. The subject hasn't even come up.
What?
Well, I just have a feeling that it might, and I want to be ready with the answer.
Look, I want a frank statement of fact. Do you see any improvement in me at all?
Angie, you look wonderful.
You look great. Straight arrow?
Sure. You'll sweep him off his feet.
Crazy.
Come in.
Basil enters.
Hi, you kids ready yet?
Hello, Basil. How are you tonight, Basil?
Okay, short one. Come on, let's go.
Sweep him off? I'll knock him off.
Good night, Mel.
Good night, Tuggle.
As Angie and Tuggle head out, Merritt turns to Melanie.
You sure you won't change your mind and come along?
No, thanks. I just don't feel like going out tonight.
I hate to think of you sitting here all alone.
I'll be fine. Besides, Frank and me call. Have a good time. See you tomorrow. Good night.
As Merritt closes the door behind her, Melanie gloomily fingers a pair of stockings. Outside, Tuggle looks around, then turns to Merritt, Angie, and their dates.
I don't understand it. He's always so prompt.
Maybe he went to rent a costume.
He doesn't have to rent him. He invents him.
I don't care if he shows up looking like Whistler's father, as long as he...
Good evening, fans.
TV approaches wearing a light gray suit and striped tie. His hair is neatly combed. Tuggle gapes.
Why, TV, you look dreamy.
Well, let's blast off, people. The night isn't getting any younger.
And neither are we. Let's go.
As Tuggle takes TV's arm, he pulls out a pink and white jockey hat and puts it on. Meanwhile, inside the girls' motel room, Melanie picks up the phone and dials.
Could you connect me with room 5, please?
Now in Franklin's room, a half dozen guys horse around.
Hello? I can't hear you.
Come on, Frank, don't be a
fool. Will you wait a minute, fellas?
Hi,
Mel.
Hi. I don't usually invite myself to parties, but it sounds like I'll be awake all night anyhow.
Like I wouldn't invite my worst enemy to this party. It's a convention of idiots.
Oh. Am I going to see you? Am I going to see you?
Tonight, I mean.
Yeah, I'll meet you later. Give me time to go out to the Eddie's. Same place, about 10:30. Yeah. Well, you wait for it.
All right. I'll be there early. Please try to hurry.
Melanie listens for a moment, then sadly hangs up. She closes her eyes and takes a deep breath. Now a huge sign shows a woman in a bathing suit. Neon words light up one after the other, the Tropical Isle. Inside the crowded restaurant, the gang sits at a table.
I propose a toast. To Michigan!
To Michigan!
To the Tropical Isle!
The Tropical Isle!
To the Fairview Apartment!
As TV's glass breaks, a maitre d' approaches.
Your glasses are very weak in this place. As a matter of fact, so are your drinks.
Please, please, no excitement. All right. Be nice, eh?
All right, now take sex.
You're always taking sex. I wish you'd take something else for a change.
The day I do, you may fling my ashes to the wind.
At the next table, several older couples gape at TV, who lifts his hat to them. At the other end of the table, Merritt looks in her glass.
Ooh, what's in that anyhow?
Oh, a love potion. I tried everything else, and now I'm trying to get you blotted. Blottoed.
You know something, Ryder? You just may succeed.
In what?
In getting me blottoed.
Now Angie eyes Basil, who frowns.
What's wrong with you? I like that kind of music.
Oh, you call that music? They're probably using old Mozart arrangements.
He drops his glasses.
The glasses? I can't find my glasses here.
TV hands him drinking glasses.
Get those glasses. These glasses.
Lock the door.
The maitre d' scolds them.
No excitement. I ask you to get out from here. Please.
Hey, I think I found them.
Ryder.
Where? Aren't these your glasses?
Ryder hands them to Basil, who puts them on. The lenses are cracked.
Turn on the lights.
Somebody stepped on them.
Someone stepped in my friend's glasses.
Now, what sort of an establishment are you running here?
Please, please, sit down.
I'm blind. Angie, you'll have to lead me around, Angie.
Oh, I'm Merritt. That's Angie over there.
He turns to Tuggle.
Did you hear me, Angie?
I hear you.
Once again, the management takes pleasure in presenting Lola, the sea nymph of the Tropical Isle.
At the far wall, a curtain slides open, revealing a large tank of water. Inside, a giant clamshell opens. Lola, a busty blonde, sits inside, wearing a gold bathing suit and tiara. A rope ladder covered in seaweed hangs down beside her. The smiling sea nymph waves to the audience, then swims to the front of the tank. She does graceful backflips, making complete circles under the water. Now she holds onto handles on the tank floor and sways her legs from side to side. At the table, TV watches, transfixed.
What lungs?
Lola's low-cut bathing suit reveals her cleavage.
Get those lungs.
It hasn't anything to do with her lungs. She's got a little hose down there she breathes through.
Lola puts a camouflage tube to her mouth.
You see?
What lungs?
Tuggle frowns at him. In the tank, Lola holds onto the seaweed ladder. Grasping it between her legs, she arches her upper body way back. At the table, Ryder waves a candle in front of Basil.
What's going on? What's going on?
Lola, the sea nymph.
Tuggle turns his head.
What's she doing?
Breathing.
TV.
TV's chair is empty.
What happened to TV?
She looks under the table.
Did anybody see TV?
What's going on?
TV jumps in the tank. He gives Lola a hug, and she tries to push him away. Tuggle gapes. As Lola and TV struggle, TV gets caught in the seaweed ladder.
Oh, he can't even swim! TV!
Tuggle rushes over to the tank. As TV paws at Lola, Tuggle races up a nearby staircase, followed by Merritt and Ryder. In the dining room, the maitre d' and customers gawk. Backstage, Tuggle and Merritt crawl out onto a narrow ladder over the water. As Tuggle reaches her hand into the tank, Merritt stands above her, holding onto her waist. TV pulls on Tuggle's hand, and both girls fall in. In their dinner dresses, Tuggle and Merritt swim to TV and try to unhook him from the ladder. Tiny bubbles rise up around them as they struggle with his legs. The maitre d' watches with wild eyes. As Lola tries to free TV's head from the ladder, Ryder dives in. He swims around and joins the others by TV. TV's eyes widen and his lips press together. He grabs hold of Ryder's head. Above, Angie leads Basil up the stairs toward the tank.
Angie, what's going on?
Angie kneels on the ladder as Tuggle and Merritt surface. The two girls go back under, and Merritt points at the tube. Lola puts it to TV's lips. The boy's eyes widen, and his cheeks puff out. Taking the tube from his mouth, he lets out a stream of bubbles. Above, Basil wanders around.
Angie, what's going on?
Look out, Basil! Look out!
He falls in.
You can't see!
Now in the tank, Basil joins the others. Looking out at the audience, he shields his bugged-out eyes with his hands and flexes his lips like a fish. Tuggle and Merritt surface and grab hold of the ladder where Angie kneels.
He can't see!
The ladder drops and Angie falls in. The maitre d' flails. A woman behind him faints. As the teenagers swim around, Angie pulls Basil up by his hair. Above, two young men run to the tank.
That's where the rotten egg.
They jump in. The maitre d' bites his clasped hands and he grits his teeth. A total of 9 well-dressed co-eds crowd the tank. Later in the police station, the captain shakes his head at the soaked group.
One at a time.
Lola.
What's going on?
May I have a word, please? I think I can straighten out this whole matter in no time.
Go ahead.
Well, this gentleman here cannot swim, you see?
She points at TV.
No, I don't see. If he can't swim, what was he doing in the tank?
Oh, but that's the whole point. He dove into the tank because he admired me. He risked his life just to show me how much. I call that gallantry, don't you? And there's so little gallantry left in the world. I don't think he should be punished for it. I think he should be rewarded.
She kisses his cheek.
Hey, consider that now.
Yeah, consider that.
Out. Everybody out. Come on, get out. And stay dry. Wait a minute.
Lola turns to him.
Haven't I seen you in here before?
Just once, and purely by accident. The night my strap broke.
Out, out. Go on, get out. Go on.
Hey, Clamp, the night is still young. What do you say to a beast party?
Yeah!
How about Jade Beast?
The captain buries his face in his hands.
I wish I was dead.
Now on the beach, Lola performs for TV and the others.
They call me Miss Fandango, Lola Fandango. One fan for my Fandango.
And brother, you're on your way.
Lola dances with two palm fronds.
In the arms of Lola, sweet Espanola. She give me rock and roller. A rock never roll away.
Cha-cha-cha. First we do a dip or two. You dip with me, I dip with you. It's so relaxing, we all feel no pain.
And then we fling a hip or two.
TV grins.
I say this is the way it's done in Spain.
They call me Miss Fandango, Lola Fandango. One fan for my Fandango. And brother, you're on your way. And brother, you're on your way. And brother, you're on your way.
Lola pulls TV away with her. Tuggle follows, walking past Basil and his band.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now play an original...
Angie walks up and turns him around to face the crowd.
We will now play an original tone poem entitled, Don't Litter the Streets of Philadelphia.
In a clearing nearby, Tuggle sits beside TV and Lola.
That act you do in the tank, stupendous routine you've got there. Stupendous!
Thank you. It's all a matter of breath control. You have to learn to control your lungs.
He glances at her chest.
What lungs?
Tuggle rolls her eyes.
Showbiz. Must be a great life.
Oh, it has its rewards. The lights, the glamour, the applause.
Yeah. Boy.
I was in showbiz myself once.
TV and Lola turn to her.
On television.
Oh?
Where?
I was up at school. the day they made me honorary colonel of the ROTC.
Lola frowns sadly. Lola looks back at TV, who shrugs. Tuggle lowers her head and turns away from them. Across the beach, Merritt lies next to Ryder.
I love the whole world tonight and everybody in it.
Me included?
He caresses her hand.
You included.
But not enough, huh?
He empties the contents of a plastic cup into another and offers it to her.
Here.
She sits up and takes it from him. As she's about to take a sip, he grabs it from her and tosses it away. He takes her hand in his.
No more gargle for you, young lady. You'll be on your ear.
I thought you wanted me that way.
Maybe I'm feeling charitable, Merritt.
He grins, gazing into her eyes. Merritt leans in and they kiss. Meanwhile, Tuggle sits watching Lola and TV.
I was married once.
You were?
In Detroit, where I was playing. He said he was a big tool and die man. I was only 19. And he was no big tool and die man at all. He screwed bolts at some auto plant.
Tuggle turns away.
Oh, I've seen the seamy side of life, my little one. It hasn't all been beer and roses by a long shot.
We all have our troubles. Tell mine. I'm a bust with women. Out and out, complete and absolute.
Oh.
The only woman who was ever nice to me was Miss Barbara Smith Holmes Von Something. The only woman.
Lola holds TV's chin.
I think that's a stinking shame.
Tuggle frowns and runs off. The rustle interrupts Lola and TV as they're about to kiss. Meanwhile, Merritt and Ryder sit back to back.
You know what I want tomorrow? I want to go out in the boat all day long. I want to keep going in a straight line, never turn back.
That'd be fine. Except the boat went out of water for repairs today, and tomorrow I'm heading north.
Tomorrow? You have to?
A few hours from now, we'll be saying goodbye. Nice to have known you, Merritt.
She stares at him for a moment, then gets up and marches off. He follows her past some tropical foliage. Catching up to her in front of an ocean view, Ryder holds Merritt from behind and rests his cheek against her strawberry blonde hair.
I could stay down a couple of days, Merritt. Wouldn't matter. Stay with me, Merritt.
She shakes her head.
We need time. It's new to me. The way I feel about you, I don't know what it is. Maybe that old-fangled thing called love. Do you suppose, Merritt?
She faces him.
Before getting acquainted...
He nods and she kisses him. Now Lola leads TV by the hand down a secluded stretch of beach. They trip and fall in the sand. Tuggle, leaning against a palm tree nearby, watches with tears in her eyes as TV playfully tosses some sand, then helps Lola back to her feet.
Hey, my shoes!
Falling again, TV grabs her white high-heeled shoes from the sand. Lola helps him back up and leads him away. At the palm tree, Tuggle stuffs a handkerchief into her shirt pocket and wipes the tears from her face. She steps out in front of the staggering couple.
Hi.
She forces a grin.
Remember me? TV. I'd like to go home, please.
So who's stopping you?
TV steps between the women as Tuggle lunges.
You go on ahead. I'll catch up.
Lola walks off.
Are you following me? What for?
Because I thought we liked each other.
Does that mean you own me? What right have you got to tell me what to do? What are you, my mother or the PTA or something? Leave me alone.
All right.
She backs away, her eyes glistening with tears.
All right.
Tuggle turns and hurries off past low-hanging tree branches. TV stands watching, his shoulders slumped. Lola returns and nudges his arm.
Come on.
Wait.
Well, if we're going, let's go. You said
you want... Will you please shut up? Please, just shut up, huh?
Now, a man walks down the terrace of a kitchenette motel, clutching a paper bag. Inside one of the rooms, Melanie strolls over to a mirror and checks her hair. Melanie goes to the door and happily swings it open. Her smile quickly disappears. In front of her stands Dill.
Franklin couldn't show. He got tied up with the idiots.
Oh, no.
He sets the paper bag on a table.
Nice to see you again, Mel.
No.
What's this?
Melanie holds her hands against him and backs away as he approaches, smiling.
Please, no.
She shakes her head and frowns as he backs her toward the wall, then kisses her neck.
No.
She tries to push him away. Now at the girls' motel room, Tug enters and leans her back against the door. Tuggle walks toward the closet, unfastening her belt. The bathroom door opens and Dodie peers out, wearing a towel and shower cap.
Hey, Tug, the phone.
As Dodie ducks back into the bathroom, Tuggle heads across the room and picks up the receiver.
Hello? What? I don't understand you.
She folds her arm across her waist.
Who is it? Who is this? Melanie?
At the other end, Melanie sits alone.
I want to speak.
Hello? Hello, Melanie?
Melanie's dress and hair are disheveled.
Melanie, what is it? Where are you?
Marina Hotel.
Where?
At the Fairview, Dodie walks up to Tuggle.
Are you all right?
Dodie lowers a towel from her face.
Melanie, answer me! Melanie!
Tuggle drops the receiver and runs out the door.
What is it?
Dodie follows her. Now Ryder and Merritt lie together on the beach, kissing. Merritt abruptly sits up and looks around.
Let's get out of here, Merritt. Will you come with me?
Where?
Any place, anywhere we can be alone. Don't you want to?
I don't know. All of a sudden,
don't be frightened.
I'm not frightened, and I'm not being coy. It's just that I've never done anything like this before.
Ryder smiles.
You certainly had me fooled. All that talk.
It's all it was, is talk. And unless you love me the way I love you.
I love you, Mary.
She throws her arms around him and kisses him. He stands, pulling her up, then walks off with her. Elsewhere on the beach, Tuggle runs past some palm trees.
Merritt! Merritt!
Merritt turns.
Tug!
Merritt!
What is it?
Something's happened. Melanie.
Melanie!
She called. She wanted to talk to you.
What did she say?
I don't know. I couldn't understand her. She's in trouble, Mayor.
Where is she?
I don't know. A motel or something. Silver Beach. That's all I could get.
Silver Beach?
Up the road about 5 miles. Come on.
The three run off. Now at the Marina Motel, Melanie slowly steps out of her room, her head hung low beneath her tousled blonde hair. She hesitates in the doorway, then takes a breath. Melanie ambles down the terrace, heading straight into the adjacent road. A black car shoots right past her. Melanie walks zombie-like across the street as another car passes behind her. Another car swerves around her. Showing no expression, Melanie turns and continues down the center of the road. Behind her at the motel, an old man carrying a sack sees her and waves.
Hey!
Another car swerves past Melanie from behind, narrowly missing her.
Crazy kid.
The old man tosses a dismissive wave and turns to the door of his room. Meanwhile, Melanie crosses a busy intersection. As cars weave past, headlights splash across her unkempt blonde hair and blank face. Elsewhere, Ryder drives Tuggle and Merritt in his Cadillac. Outside, Melanie walks steadily down the center of the dark road. Ryder's Cadillac makes a sharp turn and heads straight for her. As the Cadillac swerves onto the shoulder of the road, another car clips Melanie. Ryder gets out, darts into the street, and grabs the fallen girl. As the car speeds toward them, Ryder dives to the roadside with Melanie still in his grasp. Merritt and Tuggle rush over. Later, in a hospital, Tuggle and Merritt wait on a couch while Ryder sits on a desk next to a police officer.
Oh, one more thing. When they brought her in, the nurse said she was mumbling something about a boy named Dill. You know where he can be reached?
No, sir.
Dill? What's he got to do with it?
Well, he was at a motel with her earlier, walked out and left her.
I know where to reach him.
Miss?
Tuggle approaches the police officer.
Fairview Apartments, apartment 5.
Ryder sits by Merritt.
She'll be all right. I talked to the ambulance doctor. He didn't think it was too bad.
I suppose somebody should thank you. I'm sorry, I'm not in a grateful mood right now.
She stands and storms over to a window. Ryder follows.
Are you going to blame me for what somebody else did to her?
I blame all of you who think of a girl as something cheap and common, just put here for your personal kicks.
Look, she got mixed up with the wrong people.
Have you met any right ones lately?
The policeman walks past.
Am I all through?
Hmm? Oh, yes, go ahead.
As Ryder follows him toward the door, a doctor approaches.
Merritt Andrews? Oh, she wants to see you. Room 136.
Merritt rushes down a hallway.
How is she?
She'll get by.
The doctor walks off, smoking a cigarette. Ryder stares down the hallway, then heads out the front door. Now, inside a room, a nurse opens the door and lets Merritt in.
Just for a minute. She'll be asleep soon.
The nurse leaves, shutting the door behind her. Lying in bed with a sheet pulled up to her neck, Melanie opens her eyes and looks at her friend. Merritt smiles and walks to her bedside.
Yeah, you all right? Oh, I lived it up, didn't I, Mel? I sure lived it up. Shh, Mel, now don't.
She runs her hand through Melanie's hair.
Why didn't I die, Mel? Didn't I die? Hey, look. Everything's going to be all right. Do you hear me? As soon as you get back to school.
Melanie shakes her head.
I'm not at school. I want to go home to my father. I want to talk to my father and my mother. They'll tell me what to do, won't they, Matt?
Sure they will. Hey, look, I'll wait and go home with you. We'll take the bus together. We'll have a wonderful trip. You wait and see.
Oh, Matt.
She turns away from Merritt. Tears stream down both girls' faces.
I feel so old. So old.
Listen, now it's not the end of the world. You've got a long life to live. You've got a long way to go. You meet somebody. Some nice boy back home.
Oh, some nice boy.
Melanie swallows.
I'll tell him all about my wonderful spring vacation. Oh, he'd like to hear that, wouldn't he, Matt?
Merritt looks into Melanie's eyes.
Mel, listen. It's all right. It's all right, darling. You go to sleep now.
Mel, you want to hear a big joke,
Mel? Melanie closes her eyes.
They weren't even Haley's.
Merritt runs her hand through her sleeping friend's hair. She lowers her head over Melanie's and covers her own eyes with her hand. Merritt presses her cheek to her friend's and embraces the young woman. Now in the waiting room, Tuggle sits on a couch. As a nurse passes with a tray, Tuggle stands and stares down the hallway, her arms crossed. TV enters through the front door.
I got here as soon as I could. How is she?
We don't know yet. How would you hear about it?
I went to the apartment to find you. Dodie told me. I want you to know, Tug. I wasn't anyplace else tonight.
Tuggle stares at him, her arms still crossed. She walks over and hugs him. TV smiles and massages her back. Daytime. At the Fairview, Basil stands alone as Tuggle, TV, and Angie push down on the open trunk of the blue convertible.
One, two, go!
TV jumps onto the trunk.
Doug, you forgot this.
Oh, no.
Merritt carries a suitcase.
So long, Merritt. Give Melanie our love, huh?
I sure will.
See you in the frozen north.
Angie leads Basil to the convertible.
Lift your right leg 6 inches. There you are.
Thanks, huh? Hey, you know something? You're a very beautiful girl, Angie.
That's right, uh-huh.
I gotta keep this kid in the dark.
Come on, Tug, let's hit the road.
Okay. Here. So how long are you going to be here?
Oh, the doctor says it'll be about 2 or 3 days.
Anything I can do for you?
Just let me know if I'm still in school.
Okay.
Take care of yourself.
Well,
okay. Goodbye, Mary.
Is
it brush up on your interpersonal relations?
Come on, sir.
Hey, TV, you watch your driving.
Oh, you mean two hands on the wheel?
Mm-hmm.
Like this.
She slides under his arm.
What's going on? What's going on?
Basil stares ahead blankly. Smiling, Merritt waves as they drive off, then scratches her neck and heads toward the motel. She stops and turns around. Shifting her eyes pensively, she strolls forward. Now, feathery palm trees stand tall on a smooth, empty beach. Below, Merritt strolls through a tree's shadow toward the sun-dappled ocean, her dress fluttering in the wind. She stops and sits. Using her finger, she draws a question mark in the sand.
Ryder Smith.
Merritt looks up as Ryder, dressed in a white shirt and blazer, steps forward and sits next to her.
Brown University. Senior class.
He smiles at her, then turns serious.
I heard you were staying behind. I thought I'd hang around, drive you and Melanie home.
Thank you.
How's she doing?
It's coming along. It'll take time, but she'll pull out of it. I'm sorry about the other night, what I said at the hospital.
Don't apologize. I had it coming.
I was angry. More than that, I was just plain scared. I kept thinking it could have been me. It could have been Ryder.
He shakes his head.
You'd never lose your grip. You're a pretty strong girl, Merritt.
Not really. No girl is when it comes to love. What she thinks is love.
Merritt stares ahead reflectively.
How do you know the difference? Do you love me, Ryder?
He faces her.
I think so.
Merritt grins faintly.
Do I love you, Ryder?
I hope so. Look, I don't have the answers any more than you. But for us, anyhow, it's not the way we started out. I'm sure of that now. I don't want to know you for just a few days or a spring vacation. I'd like to know you for a long time, Merritt.
She smiles broadly.
I'd like to know you, too.
Ryder smiles back.
A lot of big things coming up this term. Senior prom. House dance. Graduation. A lot of big things. You think you can make a couple of them?
Merritt nods. Ryder gently kisses her. Appear. The End. Where the Boys Are, presented by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.